Hoops fans, how you doing? It's your boy John of the Factory with you for a fresh episode of NBA Takedown here on a sunny but cold and icy Monday morning, where I don't know, it's still sunshine and rainbows as far as I'm concerned, as it has been for the last 36 or so hours, 40 hours? I don't know. How long has it been since the end of that game? Jeff Johnson, I have not talked to you since the Knicks thwarted the Orlando Magic in the Cup semis. So I think I know the answer to this, but I will ask you nonetheless. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well, bro. I can't complain. I love a game with stakes. And we have a game with stakes coming up tomorrow. I am an NBA Cup enjoyer, and I've enjoyed this group stage. I've enjoyed these knockout rounds. I think they've pretty much got a strong B-plus from me, with room to improve on the margins, which they're taking steps to do next year. So, I'm doing well, man. I can't complain.
It was a... I agree with the B plus, although if I was actually giving this a grade, I would underneath the B plus, I would put in parentheses, this should really be a B, young man or woman, because of the audio from Saturday night's games on Prime. But I will give you a pass this time. It's like you want to scare the living daylights out of the child, so that they will do better next time.
So is the NBA and their broadcast partners a group project?
Well, if it was a group project, then everybody
then it
would
be a B.
Pointing fingers.
Then it would be a B, for sure.
Then it would be a B. That's correct.
That triggered me so crazy, because I'm like, yo, I handed it in.
I did my segment.
Right.
That's always
you tell the never- teacher, yo, you know what was going to happen when he was on our group. You know this, man.
Like, this is your fault, teacher.
Right. Actually, you didn't maximize our academic abilities.
Sean of the W, were you the person in the group project who brought up the collective level, brought it down, or were you just like, if it was a good group, you would have gone to the good. If it was a bad group, you would have been brought down to the bad.
I always just did my job, whatever my job was.
Tom Thibodeau would be proud.
Yes.
Good job.
There was one situation in college where we had a group project where I was a leader. Okay. And there was a gentleman who played for the football team, who shall remain nameless. And he basically, all intents and purposes, told me that he'd be able to contribute little to nothing because he had to, in his words, get ready for the draft. And I knew good and goddamn well he wasn't going to get drafted. And I left his name off the paper and I never saw him again.
So we have a lot to get through. I don't want to take too long, but I had a group project in college with myself, my best friend, Aaron, who we took the class together. Another girl, Andrea Makatenge, shout out to wherever she is. Very good student who I'd actually gone to grammar school with. So I know she was a good student. And a kid that I think he came to the project was like 3 months into the class, and the kid had come to the class maybe once. I think he had gone to come to class the first day. So we just went to the teachers like, look, we're not going to try to even get this kid involved, because why would we do that to ourselves? And she was like, that's fine. It was cool, which I appreciated very much. Jeff, did you like group projects?
When the group is good, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're fine when everybody's contributing. But when you have that one person that's bringing down the whole rest of the group, and your GPA is on the line, your grade is on the line, it's not really that enjoyable. But I do think students should go through that. You should have that experience in order to know what can happen in the real world or in any type of team environment that you're going to be a part of, and how to be resilient and persevere through some bullshit.
See, this is why you're the wise one of the three of us. Okay, so we are later today. Well, actually, so... couple things. One, in a bit, we are going to draft the most important players from the NBA Cup finale. The eligible players are, of course, going to be the entire rosters of the New York Knicks and the San Antonio Spurs. What does most important mean? Well, that's going to be up to us, and it'll be interesting to see which direction we go. And we are going to do the takeoff in a minute. But first, a quick announcement that the format of the show moving forward is going to be changing a little bit. So here's what's going to happen. Moving forward, the three of us are still going to come your way on Mondays at 10 a.m. or excuse me, 10 a.m. somewhere, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. What is it, 10 a.m. Rocky Mountain?
Mountain.
I feel like I never hear, like, no one I ever talked to was like, yeah, I'm in Mountain Time. It's either Pacific or Central.
I had coworkers in the Mountain Time Zone. Because that's where Phoenix is.
You have friends
in Denver.
I didn't say friends. I said coworkers. Yeah.
Excuse me. So
although the coworker is a very close colleague of mine. So like, shout out to you, Kayla. Even though I know you're not watching.
If they were in town, would you get a drink with this person?
Yes.
All right. So then they're probably closer to the friend zone. So yeah, that's still going to happen every Monday at noon. And we are still going to do an episode to end the week. Probably have a guest on, which either I'll talk to or maybe I'll be joined by one of these fine gentlemen. But those will be the only full episodes for the week. So instead of what we've been doing, which is a Wednesday show, instead we're going to be trying to put out shorter, sweeter, more topical mini pods and videos, which of course, if you're listening this, you could find those on the NBA Takedown YouTube channel. And if you are watching this either on Twitter or on YouTube, you'll be able to hear those on NBA Takedown, wherever you get your podcast. Something that we're going to experiment with a little bit. Obviously this is a still relatively new show, so we are trying to find the right balance, as Sean always tries to find the right balance with his internet and camera. There you go. Hi, Sean. Good to see you again. It's just we're trying to find the best way to deliver you the best NBA content that is out there, and also me not putting myself 6 feet under by the All-Star break. And I would just leave that there.
Yes, sir.
Listen, man, when the gods came and told me you don't have to be a teacher anymore, the world is yours. At least I didn't go for that big pile of cocaine, right? At least my vice was like, I'm going to do all of the things, not cocaine. So in the grand scheme of things, right? Not that bad.
Yes, not that bad.
Not that bad. Okay. Let's...
Some cocaine. Dígame.
I'm still pissed. I'm sorry. I'm still pissed that my beloved Michelle Pfeiffer, who was a smoke show in that movie, a mere 42 years later is relegated to doing Drek holiday nonsense on Amazon Prime. Listen, it hurts my soul.
Listen, as Jalen Rose once said, keep getting them checks.
You don't need the money, Michelle. You really don't.
That's how the rich stay rich. They don't turn down bags. Like, no,
they don't. They don't. All right. Here comes the takeoff.
2-1-0 ignition. Liftoff.
All right, Sean, I know you have this one keyed up, so go for it.
So I had a take. My take was going to be about the Orlando Magic and their incessant bitching and whining that their fan base has been doing the last 48 hours after telling us it was going to be belt to ass on Saturday night. But you know what? I'm done giving. I'm trying to do better at giving oxygen to these bots and children and rage baiters and engagement baiters on the internet, right?
It's very kind of you.
Yeah, we'll save that for NBA. We'll save that for campus after school.
Is that going to be your New Year's resolution?
No. No. But I have several. I actually have a take about New Year's resolution. We'll get to for our New Year's Eve episode.
We'll save it.
Yeah, so for my take, I'm going to read a quote. We're in an optimization obsessed culture where important employees for multi-billion-dollar institutions don't want to risk getting hurt. At the same time, it's that optimization impulse that's done a lot of self-damage to the NBA specifically as they try to wrestle out of that reality. In response to this problem that afflicts nearly every league, save for maybe the NHL, Adam Silver has been doing just too much. That is a quote from Ethan Strauss. Now, is Ethan Strauss talking about the NBA Cup or is he talking about the NBA All-Star game?
Mm. Ooh.
My guess would be the NBA Cup, although the way you phrased it now, I'm doubting myself.
That quote is about the NBA All-Star game.
Interesting.
And I say that to say this.
Interesting.
We have to hear all the time about how the regular season doesn't matter. The regular season doesn't matter before Christmas. It doesn't matter while the NFL is on. It doesn't matter, doesn't matter, doesn't matter. And the NBA, it actively tries to attach, I'll use the word that Jeff used, stakes to regular season games to make them matter. And we see that the players, the same players that we talk about load management and they make more money, they don't care, they don't do this, they don't do that. We've seen they have played hard. They've played hard in every one of these tournament games. Yet I have to see a deluge of people on the internet and not just faceless Avi people, faceless Avis and bots and children, whatever, like respected, semi-respected, notable people in NBA media, as well as people who claim to be fans of the sport, tell us why this doesn't matter. This doesn't matter. This doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This is fake. Meanwhile, these are the same people who write think pieces and complain about how can we save the All-Star game, which is literally an exhibition game that was created to do what? Drive revenue.
Yeah.
The All-Star game is a relic of the past where it was like, hey, let us get a bunch of these teams together and then people will pay to watch it, whether on TV, whether in person or as media evolved onto TV. Like, if you say the NBA Cup doesn't matter, you are part of the problem. Like, I'm not saying you have to love it. I'm not saying you have to treat it. Listen, it's not the NBA championship. It never has been. It never will be. No, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm just tired of people that's like, it's just the cool thing to do now. It's like Kevin Durant said, most people, it seems that more people would rather complain about the NBA than watch it. And it's just become the in vogue thing to do just to complain about the NBA. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't say the regular season is meaningless. And then when they attach meaning to the game, you say, this doesn't matter. Like, you're part of the problem. But again, there are millions of people who love the NBA who don't like basketball.
Jeff, what's your thought on that? Because I have a response.
I have a similar takeoff that people like to complain about basketball. They don't actually like it.
Okay.
Like, they use it as a release due to the trials and tribulations of life. You hate your job, you hate your relationship, you're going through a different struggle and you want to blow off steam. And one of the best ways to blow off steam is to complain about a sport that's supposed to be giving you an escape and a joy from what you're going through in your life. But you find it better to complain. There's been complaints specifically about this league for every decade of my life. Every decade of my life. I remember when they moved the three-point line into 22 feet all around to encourage three-point shooting. And after a season, they were like, all right, ironically, too many people are trying to take threes. Let's move it back to 23-9. I remember when they removed the hand checking because they were not trying to watch the NFL on hardwood. Then they complained, hey, we might have went too far this way with the offense. Right. If you were to pull out a euro in 1991, they would burn you at the Salem witch trials. this is just what's going on right now. And it's annoying. And just like what Sean said. How do you elevate the game by shitting on a way that they're trying to elevate stakes within the game so that you actually care about the first 3 or 4 months of the season? Critique is fine. That's the way that we evolve and elevate and get better. But to just automatically dismiss it, like, I've seen the dialogue. Oh, why would you raise a banner? It doesn't mean anything. I saw somebody say it doesn't have any credence for your All-Star game or your Hall of Fame career or anything like that. And I'm like, well, the NBA Cup games are actually regular season games. So they are going to have some type of weight on whether or not you do get chosen for the All-Star. 20 years from now, people will be using NBA Cup as a reference. Like, hey, this guy won the NBA Cup X amount of times. That's just another accolade. The same way they added a Eastern Conference and Western Conference MVP. But I haven't seen that same type of backlash. It's just the ignorance of American sports when it comes to cup competition outside of your league.
Is it the ignorance of American sports when it comes to cup competition, or is it the fact that we live in a social media age and negativity gets a lot more traction than positivity?
Yes.
It's just, I think it's that simple. I think we live in a world where if you have a take, there are 18 different platforms with which to get your take off. And that is a way to feel seen. And you're going to be seen a lot more if you bitch and moan about something than if you're like, hey, this is great. I like this. This is a cool thing. Where I thought you were going, Sean, with the original quote and why I thought it was about the cup is the discourse, which I do think there is some emphasis on some validity to the fact that it condenses the early portion of the season to, and which may, emphasis on may, lead to more injuries because guys are playing too much. That's the only part of it where I could see there being some valid criticism. I think the cup is very cool. And by the way, I haven't always been into the cup, but it's like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, this doesn't matter or this doesn't count. It's like, all right, I may not be into it as much as others, but it's a cool thing. And everybody who likes it shouldn't. That's great. That's awesome.
It's cooler than the All-Star game right now.
I mean,
far cooler.
If we're really going to do the history lesson thing, correct me if I'm wrong. You guys might know better than me in this. Isn't the whole reason that all leagues have an All-Star team is because, or All-Star game, is because baseball had it, and that the only reason baseball had it was because AL teams didn't face NL teams, so it gave teams of fans of an AL team an opportunity to see a player who was on an NL team, yes, and vice versa.
Right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Listen, the gift and the curse of the internet is that it brings like-minded people together. In terms of the cup, listen, they're critiques that need to be made. As I said on Study Hall and I said on the internet, it should be the semifinal, and they're doing this. The semifinals will be hosted by the higher seed, I agree. But the finals should be 3 weeks later.
Yep.
That way you can get 3 weeks to a month later. Like in England, the FA Cup semifinal is the last week of April, and the FA Cup final is in London at Wembley Stadium 3 weeks later. So you give, and listen, now in England, everyone, you can drive or take a train or whatever. Yeah, obviously we're a much bigger country than England, but if you gave fans 3 to 4 weeks to book travel, book accommodations, whatever, you'll get a better atmosphere. Because what I've heard a lot of people say is the place is half empty. And honestly, if it weren't for the Knicks being in it, it may have been an even worse atmosphere. So
yeah, they were probably hoping for Knicks and Lakers to make it to the Cup semis to pack it out.
Yeah, exactly. So
I mean, Knicks Spurs, I would hope that's going to get a decent.
Well, they have time now. Like the local Vegas people have time now to like prepare for it. So I think people would pull up. But just to say, like, I've been to Knicks Lakers games at Summer League that feel like I'm in the Garden or I'm in Crypto. Like it's insane because a lot of those people are Lakers fans that are in Vegas, and then the Knicks fans travel. So it feels like you're at a bowl game, like a real bowl game. So I think that's what they were hoping for, putting it in Vegas.
The Spurs don't, I'm not breaking any news here, don't have the largest fan base in the league. So it's a short flight from San Antonio, you know. If it was certain other teams, maybe, but like trying to turn this around in, you know, it's, again, a week, especially if you have it in Vegas, like if the Lakers aren't involved or, you know, the Warriors, then it's gonna be tough.
I've said it, I think on this show, I said it or during the mailbag, and I've said it a couple of places. If you're going to go for it, have two in-season cup tournaments and have the winners of those respective tournaments get, if not a bye in the playoffs, get some playoff benefit. There has to be a way to do that, I think.
There's ways.
Yeah. So anyway, I was going to go a different direction with my takeoff. I'll be brief, and I'm curious. I want your input on these, my rankings here. I was going to just do an updated season from hell ranking, coming in at number 5, making their first appearance on this list, the Golden State Warriors. Congratulations for being under 500 on December 15th. coming in at number four and moving their, this is a big drop for them. The New Orleans Pelicans, who have actually reeled off a couple of wins over the last week and change, and their young players are looking great. So dulls the impact of them not having their pick. Number three, this was really tough for me to put them this low because I wanted to put them a lot higher. The Cleveland Cavaliers. Jeff, your rant from a week ago, looking prescient, my friend. Seriously.
What the hell happens to the Cleveland? I'm not even a Cavs fan, but I'm like, what the hell happened to the Cleveland Cavaliers? Has Max Strus seen the inside of a gym this season? Has he played? I don't think he has, right?
What if somebody showed him a picture of the inside of the
Cavaliers? Maybe that counts. Maybe that counts. Garland, you're in. Garland, you're out. They're not playing Mobley and Jared Allen.
Well, now Mobley's,
as many minutes together.
Now they're really not going to be playing the minutes together. Because
Mobley, right. Now Evan Mobley got a calf strain. Like, what's going on? Like, yo, Donovan Mitchell is playing with Bel Air Academy right now. He's not even playing with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
All right. Well, listen, that'll give him an excuse to go 1-for-11 from three last night, but he moved.
Hey, listen.
But he's afforded an off night, bro. Like his shoulders are about to disintegrate.
That's the thing, is like he's having a borderline first team All NBA season, and they're 15-12. Yeah, I just don't know, because they're a second apron team, and like Dan Gilbert hasn't always been the most biggest spender in the past. So if there's
all that interest from Quicken Loans, he better open his purse.
We'll see what happens with Cleveland. Get well soon, Evan Mobley. And then in what is really, I thought this was going to be the year of the MVP race for the ages. Well, maybe now that Oklahoma City lost a second game, maybe it will turn into more of a race. But I think now this is truly the race for the ages. The battle between the Clippers and the Bucks for the season from hell title. I'm still putting the Clippers at number one, but the Bucks are making a strong push and they're a solid number two for me.
I think the Bucks have more excuses.
By making many organizational missteps over the years?
Yeah.
The Clippers, if you told me Clippers or Bucks, who are more likely to have a season from hell before we started the season?
Okay.
I would have said the Bucks.
I would have said the Bucks also.
I would have said the Bucks with all the aspiration stuff. I would have said the Bucks easily. We didn't know who they were going to be at the beginning of the season, so that was like primed up. This Clipper shit is different. It's different. Like they got guys there. They got guys. They know. They already knew that Kawhi might not be there for along the way. James Harden is having a fantastic season, and they can't win. No. Like it's unfathomable that a team that I think preseason I had them in like the 4-5 range.
I think a lot of people did. I had
like
it pretty
4-5 because they would be the expendable Clippers, but they still would know how to win and get a top four, top five, six, or make the top six.
Yeah.
This is absolutely confounded. Even more than the Cavs, because I know they've had injuries, but this is like, I did not see the worst case scenario coming for them.
The only thing why I would think about putting the Bucks ahead is because I think even in Milwaukee's worst nightmare, they were not envisioning a team that would lose by 40. What was the final margin? 49 points.
45, I think.
Yeah. To the Brooklyn Nets without Giannis. I mean, I'm sure you guys saw, I forget who had the original report, but something like Giannis is not comfortable with all the trade talk. And I think it's from KOC show, you know, because it's all coming from his reps. Come on, man. What are we doing here? Seriously.
I didn't tell them to speak on the record. I just told them in confidence that now they want to speak on the record. Now I look like the bad guy. I can't vent. I can't vent to my friends. Everybody needs to shut up and just focus on the court. Just focus.
My chair almost fell backwards.
That's the second impersonation Jeff has done the last half hour. If you know, you know. He nailed both of them.
Jeff, man, you got to retire from the podcasting game. You should be in a black box theater somewhere or something. Broadway, whatever. Okay. How do I go back from that? You want to talk about the NBA Cup?
Let's do it.
Yeah. So we're going to draft the most important players from this game that's coming up between the Spurs and the Knicks. Before we do, like we've all talked about the Knicks a lot already. So we could, and we'll talk about them more as we draft through this draft. Just briefly, Sean, you're like, gut reaction takeaway as you were watching the fourth quarter of Spurs Thunder the other night.
So funny thing is, I actually went back and watched it this yesterday morning because someone on Twitter whose name I forget pointed out that like basically said that the Spurs may have the formula, for lack of a better phrase, to beat the Thunder, and of course, you know, all the replies are just like, yeah, they have Wemby, 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 Wemby. But the Spurs went on a 16-7 run to start the third quarter when Wemby was not playing. And for me, listen, Wemby is the easy answer. Like, they have him and you don't. If they have him, then you don't. But, like, these guards, like,
mm-hmm.
And they have – they're – The Spurs are sneaky big. Like, De'Aaron Fox is their shortest guy.
Sneaky? I don't think it's that sneaky.
Well, you don't, because you know what it is? Because now people think like, oh, they have size. They just think of a bunch of guys, like 6'9" switchable wings. Like size is like,
I got you.
OG Anunoby, right? But like they have size. They have size across the board. They can be a little bit more physical. And I think it's like they say, pressing teams don't like to be pressed. Oklahoma City has been beating people over the head with 2x4 defensively for the last season, this season. It looked like they got a little bit of their own medicine on Saturday night.
I think that's fair. Jeff?
Yeah, I agree. It was high-level hoops, man. It felt good to see OKC face competition, like elevated, real competition that could give them a run. I do think that the Thunder try to rest on their laurels, that we're going to Thunder this game and we're going to win in the final seconds, which means we're going to draw the fouls we need to draw. We're going to win at the free throw line. Shea is going to pull us out. Ain't no way these Spurs are going to beat us. And then it seemed like the ref said, y'all boys settle it on the court. And it was hilarious to see the complaints about fouls, given that we were watching the XFL for most of this season and for last season in the playoffs, and they faced a team that was matching their energy physically. And I think that the Spurs also down the clutch made more plays than
did.
OKC. And they were able to guard up against Shea in those final moments where they were forcing somebody else to beat them. And when Shea tried to take it into his own hands, yeah, the shots didn't fall. But I do think you can't underestimate the impact that Wemby had on that game, even in 21 minutes. I think just his presence alone was able to elevate a team that was already playing well without him. So I thought it was good. And it just reminded me of another one of Sean's takes where he said, and we spoke about it on KFS After School, the OKC Thunder have the lowest strength of schedule on Dunson threes, the EPM.
Mm-hmm.
Funny
mm-hmm.
enough, the quote-unquote contenders in the league and the folks who are considered quality wins all are within that top 10. Right. But with them, they are like,
they've had the easiest schedule thus far.
By far,
what
though,
you're saying.
Yes. Not just by like far. By tenths of a decibel. Like, according to that, to Thunks and Threes, they're like at a 2.9, and the next team is at like a 1.5.
Yes.
And when Sean goes through the teams that they beat, you play the teams in front of you, sure. But if two-thirds or three-fourths of the teams you played are considered bottom 10 in the league,
yeah,
then it's fair to say, okay, what about when you play the teams that are considered a tier below you? The first two games were against those teams, against Indiana and the Rockets, and they went to double OT, like Sean pointed out. So I think it's not diminishing their talent. I still think they are the class of the league. It's just we haven't seen them tested in a minute. Like, for real.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, they have one of the top two players, or the guy who's playing like one of the top two players in the sport. And for like, sure. J-Dub seems like he picked up right where he left off in the finals. Chet is making a leap. So it's like they got the top three in place. Obviously, the defense is the defense, and they have the depth. So it's like all of the questions are kind of there. But the one thing that you could say about them, I think, is that it's not like they have another gear on both sides of the floor. They only play in one gear on defense. On offense, it is still like, ultimately, it's like, all right, it's going to be either Shea getting the best shot he could get, or J-Dub getting the best shot he could get, and it's like, okay, well, there's a reason why they're not like the best offense in the league or the second best offense in the league. Look, it's going to make for a more fun rest of the year to see them maybe try to go for 70, I guess would be 74 wins. I was just watching the Spurs and in this game and thinking of the 94-95 Magic, thinking of I always forget what year it is. What was the first year the Durant, Westbrook, Harden?
Not 09, 10.
Year they won 50-something and made it to, what was it, the conference finals, right?
Oh, that's 11. Then they lost to Dallas. And I think they lost to Dallas.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, yes. So thinking of that teams where it's like, we knew they were going to be really good, and like, but this is even more so. It's like, I feel like one of those years in the past where it's like, man, why didn't we see this coming? Mm-hmm. They have all of these guards who nobody could stay in front of, and they're all shooting. And maybe that's why we didn't see it coming. I don't think people assume that the guards were gonna shoot it like they're shooting it so far this year. Maybe that's the thing. Which is a good transition to our draft. So for anybody who hasn't, I've done this with Fred a few times ahead of playoff series. We are going to draft the most important people, most important players for this specific upcoming game. So as opposed to the most important players for a playoff series, we're drafting the most important people or players for this game between the Knicks and the Thunders. Between the Spurs. I can't get past the fact that the Thunder lost this game. I'm sorry. This is a bad job by me.
I can, because I bet Spurs money line.
He definitely did.
On Friday, I said, interesting. Did. Shout out to me.
Shout out to Fanatics.
And Fanatics. Yes, shout out to Fanatics and to me.
And to you. Okay, the draft order goes, and again, it's whatever anybody's definition is for importance. So for some people, importance is like best, and it's just that's what it is. Other people, it's like, no, there's different degrees of importance. First pick, Sean.
Nice.
Did you want the first pick?
I was doing a drum roll. Yes, I will take the first pick.
I get the second pick. Jeff, you are on the turn.
That sounds good.
Okay, so and we're going six rounds. So everybody's going to end up with six players, 18 players total, which might be pushing it. I have a feeling the last few players picked might be Knicks, but we'll see. All right, Sean, who is the most important player in Knicks versus Spurs?
Well, I will say that if I'm picking Victor Wembanyama first, I will say that if the Magic had won this game and were drafted between the Magic and the Spurs, that it would be Paolo Banchero for Bullet, because I was told that Paolo Banchero was the next big thing and that he was going to be unstoppable because he was 23 and he scored 20 as his first year. So, you know, he's automatically get better each year. And I told people that Paolo Banchero was Julius Randle of better PR, and maybe I was wrong. I was just early, and yes, I did just hijack the show to get this agenda off. But hey,
it's not the first time; won't be the last.
It won't be the last time. But what are they going to say now, right? But listen, even on a minutes restriction, this is a no-brainer.
Jeff, you think it's a no-brainer?
Come on, guys. Don't do this.
It is a no-brainer because I don't think that the Spurs can beat the Knicks without Wemby. And I think he's that much of a game changer, and that he is so transformative on the court, especially for the Spurs in general, that your whole, you have to keep him in mind, regardless on offense or defense, when you're on the court. So yeah. I think that is a no-brainer. I mean, I can see the argument for the captain.
Well,
I can see it.
But if we
put the brain, like most people on social media, if we take the brain and we forgot it because we no longer have the brain in the head, I'll go for Wemby first.
Here's my pushback. Wemby played 20 minutes in that game. Obviously, he made a massive impact in those 20 minutes. Is he going to play 25, 26, 27? Whatever amount of minutes he's going to play in this game, it ain't going to be 40. And I'm taking the guy that I would bet right now, if I could bet on such things, is going to be whatever his minute total is going to be, is going to start with a 4, and I will take Jalen Brunson. He's the most important player in the game because if he is on one to the degree that he was on one against the Orlando Magic, which I think, despite the presence of Wemby, you could argue is a better defense than the Spurs defense. The numbers say it's a better defense than the Spurs defense. If Brunson is going like that, there is nothing the Spurs defense can do to stop the Knicks offense. Only the Knicks offense at that point will be able to stop the Knicks offense by just having a cold night or players doing silly shit or maybe shot selection stuff. But if Brunson's going like that, they can't stop the Knicks offense. And if they can't stop the Knicks offense, I thought the Knicks could have easily scored 140 the other night. And I would like to think that if they put up another 130 plus number on San Antonio, they're going to win the game. So I will take Brunson as the my most important player in the series.
Now the draft begins.
I will say I thought about I did have a thought about another player, which I'd be curious if Jeff takes. He has back to back picks.
Oh yeah. So my first pick on the turn, this is a good turn to have.
It's a good turn.
Is from basketball country, Indiana. OG Anunoby.
I was curious how high he was gonna go.
The man who is right now a plus 35 in his last five games. You want to talk about transformative players. I don't think they've been making enough commotion nationally about the way OG Anunoby plays defense. I did think he was a snub for all NBA teams last year. I just think that he does
stuff. You mean all defense?
All defense, yeah.
All defense,
yeah. All NBA defense, yes, yeah. I'm not completely out the window with no parachute. All NBA defense. I think he was a snub last year. And I think part of the reason why is because he wasn't doing a lot of stat sheet level defensive things for people to appreciate the impact, capital I impact, that he has on the team. The Knicks now employ a defense where they encourage OG Anunoby style of off-ball defense, where they're reaching. You're going into like the little pockets or the lanes, and he's able to reach within the lane. He's gotten a lot of steals off of that. He can defend at the rim as well and be a line of rim protection. And then you go to the offensive end. I was told by reasonable people that a guy who profiles as 3-and-D should not be taking as many threes as he's taking in the beginning of the season, because that's not his game. All he's done is shoot the best 3-point percentage of his career from 3-point on higher volume. I think he's hit that groove. Shout out to the Knicks medical staff has kept that man fresh, who even with the hamstring injury that is probably going to be something recurring throughout his career, because it might be a genetic thing, whatever, but I'll take every 18 months you have a hammy. That's just like your check engine light coming on. At some point, you got to bring the car in and figure it out, right? But this dude, now he's him along with his other Wingstop partner in crime are top six in the league in steals. He's almost averaging a block a game. I'm sure his deflection game is on point. I think if the Knicks are going to be able to contain the others, Stephon Castle, De'Aaron Fox, all of that, and at times probably even Wemby, because if you go back to the Christmas game, his contests late in that fourth quarter are what helped put the Knicks on top, along with Bridges playing out of his gourd. Give me OG Anunoby as somebody who the Knicks need, probably, and John has said it, probably the second most important Nick to the team, for what he brings to the court. So give me OG.
I think it's a great pick, not only because if it's a close game in the fourth quarter, you're going to see OG take the Wemby assignment. But before we even get there, like, spoiler alert, Knicks guards ain't going to be able to stay in front of these Spurs guards. So if they have a chance of limiting that dribble drive attack, it's going to be OG helping, you know, off the ball and hopefully making it, you know, generating some turnovers and turning those turnovers into points, which they did a great job of against the Magic. Okay, you have another pick.
Yes, sir. This might be a swerve. De'Aaron Fox.
I don't think that's a swerve at all.
You've been here before. You've been in high pressure playoff situations. You have the game that's antithetical to Knicks guards being able to stop right now. Someone is going to have to pick up the slack because the Spurs are an intelligent organization. They are going to have to combat Wemby's drive to win this game because he's one of those ones when it comes to competition. And also, key underrated point of view, Wemby is French. He's from France. He's grown up in the European football system. So this cup probably means more to him than a lot, especially with a lot of the international players. This cup, winning this cup probably weighs more than the average NBA player, not just because you got 500 bands on the line. It's because it's heritage. And you win the competitions that you play in. So there may be a struggle between Wemby and the team as to whether or not he should go for it and play 25, 30, 40 minutes if it means that they're going to win. I think the team is going to win that argument. So someone else is going to have to step up. And if De'Aaron Fox can be his own self and put pressure on the paint and break down the Knicks defense, especially because we don't know if Deuce McBride is playing in this game.
I wish he was.
And Shamit's not going to be in this game either. So they've lost two of their best point of attack defenders.
Or just two options. Two other options.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to have a big game regardless for the Spurs. That raises his level of importance for me.
De'Aaron Fox has shot at least 37% on threes in a game 12 times this year. The Spurs are 10-2 in those games, and one of the losses was a 1-point loss to the Warriors. They are 2-3 when he shoots 33% or less from deep. So that's the thing to me. It's like he's one of those guys where if he's hitting threes, like he's a top 15 player in the league. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that hasn't always been the case, but he's been hitting his threes this year. Okay. I think that was a great pick. I am up and I am going to take the guy that I thought about taking last time, which is Karl Anthony Towns. If Karl Anthony Towns defends the way that he has defended against the Raptors and against the Magic, and shout out to Benji Ritholtz, who wrote one of my favorite things that I've seen anybody write this year for the Knicks Film School Patreon. He was exploring Cat's defense, the stats, the data, the advanced stats, plus the eye test and how it goes beyond just him being elite defensive rebounder. But like he's doing all the little things that usually we don't see him do. If he defends like that, and then God forbid he's as efficient as he was the other night, again, the Knicks just become a very, very, very difficult team to beat. And I just think, again, they're going to need him defending at that level because we know when Wemby's not in the game, and sometimes even when Wemby is in the game, there's going to be Luke Kornet down there. And we saw Cat have his issues with the Luke Kornet-led Boston Celtic attack in the playoffs last year. So, you know, if he can help corral that pick and roll game of the Spurs, I think it's going to be massive, and we'll see if he could do it. So he's my second pick.
Now, I was going to go, if you didn't take him, I was going to take him here. So it actually kind of made my next two choices easier since I'm on the turn.
I would be shocked, by the way, if there was a player that you left for me, but I'm not going to say anything more.
Well, I'm going to go with Stephon Castle.
That was the player. Okay.
There we go. Because, and again, in that 16-7 run, in the beginning of the game, in the first 5 minutes of the quarter of the game, of the first quarter, even though it was a little rocky for the Spurs, it was like they came out the energy and Stephon Castle came out, hitting some shots and said, okay, that made me feel like this Spurs money line bet will be good. But then again, that third quarter, and it was a lot of Stephon Castle. And again, Oklahoma City, their thing is defense. They turn you over. They get stops. They get the ball out of your hands. And they couldn't do none of that. Mm-hmm. I think Bill Simmons the other day asked Joe House if he regretted passing on Stephon Castle, Alex Starr on that draft.
Washington maybe isn't the team that should have the regret.
Well, agreed. And plus, I like Alex Starr, but whatever. But also, if Stephon Castle on that team, good point that Joe House brought up. He's like, what would he be doing on this team? Like, they already have like him and the Wizards. It's not like he'd be doing this, but yeah. Stephon Castle, number five.
On Castle, for anybody who may like not be familiar with what he's been doing, averaging 18 points a game this year, and again, doesn't put up a ton of threes, but since he's come back from injury, he is 6-for-13 from behind the arc. So much better than he was before he went down with injury.
Okay. Now it's time to go a little bit off the rails.
What are you going to do? I know what I do, but you said off the rails. I know what you're going to do.
I'm picking Mitchell Robinson.
That's exactly. As soon as you said it, I was like, that's what he's going to do.
And I picked Mitchell Robinson for the reason that for whatever amount of time that Victor Wembanyama is on the floor, if you can neutralize that with a Mitchell Robinson, and I always remember Victor's first game against the Knicks at MSG, which ESPN was promoting as a coronation of this is the beginning of the Wembanyama era, yep. And Mitchell Robinson took the 7'4" guy, folded him up, and put him in his back pocket. Now, that was two seasons ago. Obviously, Mitch's injuries since then have been well documented. Obviously, he has not been peak Mitch this season, to say the least. There's been spots here and there, but it's not as much that Mitch needs to like neutralize him. I don't expect him to neutralize him or like shut him down, whatever. But if he can't slow him down and Wemby just has his way with him when he's in the game, then the Knicks are in for a long night. And again, this is a Victor Wembanyama that's probably going to play 28 minutes tops, yeah. But you can't get what we can't see is what happened in the fourth quarter against Oklahoma City.
I think it's a fair pick. Again, I would have trouble taking someone this high that you just talked about how many minutes Wemby's going to play. What do we think? We're getting 22 minutes from Mitch on the high end? Mm-hmm. 24?
Yeah. You know? Also, I don't want to Jeff's point, like, yes, Kat has been playing very well defensively, but like, I just can't bank on that. I just can't bank on that, right?
Well, you can't. You need when Kat's in the game and when he's playing center, you need him to play acceptable defense so the other team doesn't run roughshod.
Yes.
But like, there's obviously going to be parts where Kat's not in the game, and also where Kat's in the game where he's going to be with Mitch. So yeah, no, I think Mitch is a respectable pick. I don't know if I could have taken him quite this high, although I get where you're coming from for the Wemby reason. I am going to go with Devin Vassell. Is a guy that
fucking John, man.
I mean, look,
damn.
Look,
this is like fantasy football. This happens to me all the time, by the way.
Let's just call it like it is. You know, Leon should have drafted him. What was it now? 5 years ago? It's over Obi? What are you giving me the eyes for?
I thought that was 2020 for some reason.
Okay. Unless I'm completely.
No, it's 2020. No, it's 2020. Okay. Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. It made all the sense in the world at the time. It was the sort of player the any team
blame Julius for being good.
There's a number of players that before Obi Toppin, but that's another discussion for another.
Neither here nor there. So Devin Vassell is kind of coming into his own. He's shooting 40% from three this year. And then the biggest thing that I'm going to be looking for is like, you know, again, can anyone stop Jalen Brunson when Jalen Brunson's really going? No, but length has a tendency to give him issues at times. Mm-hmm. And I would not be surprised to see Devin Vassell get the assignment here or there, like with like with Wemby, I'm sure they're going to throw a lot of bodies at Jalen Brunson. It's not going to come down to any one player. I'm sure Vassell's going to get his turn, but we know sometimes what Jalen Brunson can do to younger players. And I think Vassell's going to get a shot, and we'll see if he can do enough to bother Brunson, because if he can, then that's just like, you know, and then if he's in his threes again, it's just, it's really tough to beat this team. So I'm going to go with Devin Vassell. Jeff, you got two.
Yes, sir. All right. My first pick is going to be the chief candy officer of Mike and Ike's, Josh Hart. The Knicks are 9-1 in their last 10 games, coinciding with Josh Hart being reinserted into the starting lineup. And you may ask, what is the advanced stat that has been the main contributing factor to Josh's impact on the starting lineup and the Knicks on the whole? I don't know if you find this on Dunks and Threes or Cleaning the Glass or Data Baller or PBP stats. It's called Shoot the Fucking Ball. And Josh is in the 99th percentile of shooting the fucking ball since he's entered the starting lineup. When he shoots the fucking ball, whether he makes the fucking shot or misses the fucking shot, it makes the Knicks that much fucking harder to defeat. And he is shooting right now the highest three-point percentage since his rookie year. The most attempts from three right now. He's attempting four threes a game, which... drug test me, please. I know if I got to pee in a cup, fine. I'm looking at these numbers right now. I can't even believe it. He's averaging four threes a game. That's the most that he's averaged since the 2021, 2022, 2020, the turn of the decade. He's averaging. And the reason why this is so important is because he forces defenses to be honest about his shot. You have to run and close out on Josh Hart. You have to close out on Josh Hart now, because he can make that shot. And what does that do? That opens up the lanes for Cat. That opens up the lanes for Brunson. And that also effectuates their off-ball movement. That's one of the reasons why you are able to see Josh and Mikal look like the Showtime Lakers against the Magic, because they have to pay attention to everybody. And if they're able to stick their big man on Josh and he's able to just chill in the paint, that makes everybody's lives much more difficult. This is the most important factor, because everything else you get from Hart is a given. He's going to get the 30-70 balls. He's going to get five assists. He's going to be a demon on the glass. He's going to do the Josh Hart things, the ultimate intangibles. But for the Knicks to reach their S tier, he has to do the most tangible thing, which is shoot the fucking ball. And if he's doing that more often than he's not, they can't be beat. I'll just put it real talk. They really cannot be beat if he's operating like that, amongst other things.
Quickly, 4.9 threes per 36 minutes compared to 3.1 three-point attempts for 36 minutes last year. So big jump. And then in games this season, there's been 8 games this year where Josh Hart has made multiple three-pointers. The Knicks are 7-1 in those games. The only loss was that loss at Boston. Also, to your point about bodies moving around and tougher to guard, James Edwards III of The Athletic had a great piece this morning talking about the difference and similarities between this year's Knicks and last year's Knicks, you know, and some of the coaches that he interviewed for the story talked about there's just, you know, it's not like they're supercharged all of a sudden, but there's more movement. There's more diversity in the offense early in the clock, things like that. Josh Hart's doing a lot of that stuff. So they're just generally harder to guard when you combine that stuff with Josh Hart shooting. Dude, you could have made him your first pick and I wouldn't have batted an eyelash at that. Like it would have been defensible. All right. So quick reset. Sean has Wemby, Castle, and Mitch. I have Brunson, Cat, and Vassell. Jeff, you have OG, Fox, and Hart. We'll speed up the last three rounds a little bit more. You have one more pick, Jeff.
Yep. I will go with Mikal Bridges.
There you go.
Okay. Who has played the best defense I've seen since he was in the desert. I think that he's been put in his most effective position on defenses. He's not. I remember there was this whole conversation about whether or not he was a point of attack defender, and there was one side arguing why, other sides arguing why not. The why nots won. The why nots won. He doesn't have to maneuver around picks as much. He's able to jump the passing lanes. He has a elite instinct for jumping those passing lanes. Like, it's just natural to him. So when you have him and OG on those wings, it becomes very difficult. And I think, and I could be wrong, the Spurs have guys who can break down a defense off the dribble, but they don't have enough to where you got to worry about, all right, we have to put Mikal on De'Aaron Fox, for example, because this is the best chance that we have to win. Like, Devin Vassell is more of a spot up shooter. Like, they can construct their defense in a way to make Mikal the most effective. And
sure, yeah,
his points, his willingness to maybe get hit in the paint when he goes in for a layup, the willingness to go in and just, you know, hey, baby steps, baby steps. But those baby steps have made a massive impact, right? His off-ball movement, once again, even if he scores points, 4 points here, 4 points there, and ends up with 16, and you're like, that's quiet, I promise you the impact of those points mean more than the volume.
And
so I think that On both sides, you need your two-way players to step up against a team like the Spurs. I'll take Mikal in this one because, once again, with these injuries that the Knicks have, their starters have to hit another level. And, you know, thank God that they are prepared to play long minutes due to their previous few years so that they can concentrate it on the games that are the most high leverage.
If you could dodge a wrench, you could dodge balls. This ain't nothing but dodging balls right now. That's why OG didn't get his himself twisted at the Bane toss. He's like, this is nothing. All right. I think Bridges is going to be even more important defensively than he is on offense. All right. One of you guys remind me, who's the rookie Tampa Bay wide receiver on the Bucks?
Emeka Ebuka.
Ebuka, okay. Yeah.
This pick is either going to be like me taking that dude in the whatever round, or it's going to be me taking a kicker in like the ninth round. I'm going with Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah. Wow. Most,
honestly, I'm not. I had my eye on him.
Most important, the way he has played in some of these games recently, he could come in and torpedo this thing, or if we see the best of what he is capable of, he could absolutely turn the game during the bench unit minutes. He's done it a few times this year with the Knicks, not as often as we would have liked. So for reasons both good and bad, I'm taking Jordan Clarkson with my next pick.
Listen, man, shout out to Jason M, who said it on KFS Study Hall on Sunday that, like, you're going to, like, when people like trade Jordan Clarkson, like, no, you need a guy like Jordan Clarkson in the playoffs. Like,
he's on a minimum.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
You know? For years, we complained about how there's no one else to create. There's no one else to create offense off the bench besides at the guard spot besides Jalen Brunson. It's like, well, you need him. So I'm not mad at that. No.
You got two.
I got two. All right. So I am looking. Okay. I got one player and then. All right. Oh, you took Mikal Bridges already. Okay. I'm keeping track right here.
Sean, you're already famous on this show for drafting people that have already been taken or...
That's why. And guess what? That wasn't going to happen again. All right. So I will go with... All right. Doesn't matter the order. So I'm going to go with Julian Champagne.
I was wondering when he was going to get taken. That's
simply because... You said earlier about length giving Jalen Brunson fits, and that's just another 3-and-D guy for them to throw at Jalen Brunson, and he's shooting.
And he's lacing the ball this
yes.
year.
And he's shooting 37%, 38% from three per 100 possessions.
Shoots a lot, too.
On decent volume. I had it right here. Yeah, on 38% on 6 attempts a game. So that is, yeah,
he's from New York too.
He's him or his brother that went to Wagner, or am I making that up?
I think they're both from Staten Island. That yeah. I do know.
He went to St. John's.
Oh, it's St. John's. Maybe that. Okay. I think I might've gotten my local colleges mixed up. That's a bad job by me.
It's all good. All right. So he's the next, and then the next one, you know, I thought I had a name here, and I, because I was seriously thinking, am I going to draft two consecutive Spurs here? But I am going to do so.
Yeah, I think you probably should, but so who are you going to take?
I'm going to, all right. There are two guys that have played every single game for the Spurs this season. One is Devin Vassell. The other is
Harrison Barnes.
Harrison Barnes.
Nice.
Barnes has been awesome for them. Like he's, they refer to him as like the OG, even though he's like 32 years old.
Yeah.
Harrison Barnes, like in the span of like the 2 or 3 years, whatever it was, where he left Golden State and he got to, Dallas. Maybe he was a little bit more into it, but he aged like 15 years. He went from being like the guy who was like 21 for several years in Golden State to being like 40-year-old man. He's not 40. Barnes is awesome. It's a great pick. He's here for me, so I'm going to take him. I'm going to take Dylan Harper.
Nice.
Again, in the same vein as my last pick of Jordan Clarkson being someone that could elevate or torpedo the bench unit. If the Knicks are not prepared for Dylan Harper when he comes in, off that Spurs bench, then that's going to be a problem. So I will take him here.
All right.
Jeff, your last two.
Yep. I'll go with Luke Kornet.
This is so easy. This, if you take anyone other than the two players who I think you're going to take, I'd be shocked.
I was going to Luke Kornet because they're going up against the fourth best rebounding team in the league. And they're probably going to need some help on the defensive and offensive glass. So Luke, more than anything, to be a disruptor on the pick and roll and to grab some boards. In any type of single game elimination situation, you need that. You need that. And I think he's just a super pro.
And be a good dive man, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He could D up as well. No. Well, you know, we ain't gonna disrespect. We never gonna disrespect Luke Kornet. Not on my watch.
Once a Nick, always a Nick.
Shout out to Phil Jackson. There's one good thing that he did.
No disrespect. I will not be choosing Keldon Johnson.
I'm already writing it in for myself.
I could go either.
No man, because
do
one
you want
of these
me to
dudes-
go straight forward, or you want me to go outside the box?
Do what you want to do.
Do what you want to do.
Miles McBride.
On the off chance that he plays?
If he plays and he's not ready, it could hurt the team. If he plays and he's ready, we were getting the cup.
I have to look up the... Was it reported that he is like going to miss the game?
Said he'll be reevaluated in a week, and they mentioned that on the day before Friday. So that's why people were like, well, then it's clear that he'll be out for the cup game, the both cup games, if the Knicks make it. But the thing is, he's been out there. It's been reported. He's been out there. He's been practicing. Yeah. He's been doing stuff. Him and Shamit, for whatever that's worth, right? They've been out there and they've been practicing. I just wonder, the reevaluated in a week, it might be precautionary, and we've heard that they're taking their time, like they're being extra cautious.
That's what I heard. That this
is like an ultimate X factor, because as much as I want him to play in this game, he probably should not play if he's not somewhere close to 100%.
Yeah.
But dude, if he is, if he can run, if he could jump, if he could cut, if he could shoot, if he could defend.
Man.
That's why I said I'll go off the beaten path. But if you're like, yo, he's depth since the last pick anyway, and we're probably gonna get into honorable mentions. If he was off the board.
I'm reading
Gershon Yabusele if he's off the board.
This is from Barbara Barker, who covers the Knicks sometimes. Is out. This was 4 days ago. Deuce McBride is out for at least a week with a sprained left ankle, meaning he will not be playing on Saturday in Vegas or Tuesday if the Knicks get to the finals. Will be reevaluated in a week.
Yeah, I didn't think he was going to be playing.
All right, so then I'll tank that and say that he's not. They're not going to push him.
They're not going to push him. So if you want Keldon Johnson, you could have him or someone else.
Yabusele.
Oh my God. Madison Square
Garcon.
This poor man.
At the very least, at this point,
it's found money. At this point, it's found money. He's going to get at least 5 minutes.
At the very least, he should have intel on his French brethren on the other side. At the bare minimum. at the bare minimum.
Yeah.
Go in there and be physical with your boy.
Yes.
That's all we can do.
Because like Kolek is like, he's a given at this point to me. Like his importance is like constant. Gershon, those 4 minutes could be the difference.
Well, yeah, in good or bad way.
Good or bad.
I'll take Keldon Johnson. I think Keldon is the guy. He's like the most boring NBA player in the league at this point, but he is still a good NBA player. He's going to play a decent amount of minutes. He's averaging 24 minutes a game for the Spurs this season. I'm actually just pulling up the shots. Like he's another guy. You don't think of him as a 3-point shooter. He's like just good enough where he'll take some shots.
He'll knock down them open shots for sure.
Not always, but if he does, you're probably screwed. So I'll take Keldon Johnson. Who are you taking with the last pick, Sean?
Tyler Kolek.
That's okay.
Yep.
Simply because the offense no longer goes to shit when Jalen Brunson's off the floor. And now Tyler Kolek is at the point where he's actually sharing the floor with Brunson. He shared the floor with Brunson a few minutes in the fourth quarter against Orlando, which is huge. The shout out to Mike Brown, the four starters plus Kolek offense has been doing very well. So if we can just sustain, just keep, like to Jeff's point, just keep doing what you're doing and we'll be fine in the non-Brunson. He helps us win in non-Brunson minutes.
Yes.
And my bad, y'all. I thought I was like the last pick. My bad.
No.
To like blow up.
I mean, it was your last pick, so it was fine.
Oh, there you go. Semantics on motherfucker.
Yeah. Last thing, Ben Kimgervy, who's always awesome watching along and in the YouTube chat, he did have a question for us. How do you feel about the matchups? Fox versus Jalen Brunson, ? Castle versus Mikal Bridges, ? I think the matchups are the most fascinating part of this game. We probably could have done a whole episode on that. Let's all three of us give one matchup that they think is going to happen and they're looking forward to. I am most curious about who guards Wemby when Wemby is in the game. And let's say when Mitch is not in the game. That's the thing that I'm most curious about. I actually think he will give Kat a shot. I think he's going to give Kat an opportunity to play defense against that thing and see how Karl-Anthony Towns does. That's the thing that I am personally most looking forward to.
I was going to say specifically the Mitch versus Wemby matchup, but I'll modify it because to your point, obviously Kat is going to get a shot at it, but I think Mike Brown is going to throw, I think you'll see Josh Hart on him. I think you'll see Yabusele on him. I think you may see some of Huck Porty on him. Like it's just going to be like
not drafted. Disrespect.
No
disrespect.
I think you'll see. I wouldn't surprise me if Huck Porty's like, all right, you know what? Here's 3 minutes. Please don't make a fool out of yourself, or don't let him make a fool out of you. So that's what I'm looking at. Because Brunson and Fox, listen, like you said, Brunson's going to get his, and Fox, no one has been able to stay in front of De'Aaron Fox since time immemorial. So that's the big matchup again is what I'm looking at. Yes, I'll call it the minutes restriction bowl between him and Mitch.
And then Jeff, do you? See, it all changes if Wemby starts or not, because if Wemby doesn't start and Cornette's in there, I don't think they're going to put Cornette on Kat. They would probably have Barnes guarding Kat. That means Cornette would guard Hart, which would mean, I don't know, it would make things interesting. Who do you think will start on Brunson? Let's end there. I think it's going to be between Vassell and Castle.
Yeah. I think you start with Vassell.
You have to start with Vassell?
Start with Vassell. See how it is. And then if Brunson does what he does, all right, next man up, Stephon Castle. I think De'Aaron Fox will avoid that matchup like the plague. I think he'll avoid it like the plague because for as quick as he is, he don't got the facilities to guard that man. So I'm interested in what the Spurs are going to do. Because remember, I'm old enough to remember the last time that man saw the vaunted length and rangy wings of the Spurs. He dropped a 60 ball on their head.
I remember that. One of my favorite Brunson. I know they lost the game, and it was so disappointing how they lost it. And I was like, I will never forget that night. That's all I'll say.
Exactly.
Last thing before we get out of here, I'm looking it up right now. What do you think that De'Aaron Fox over under for points is for this game?
17 and a half.
I was going to say 18 and a half.
If those are the numbers, my kid's life savings may be in danger. Because I would go, who are they going to put on Fox? That's going to slow him down / stop him.
Nobody. Honestly, I would put Brunson on him as a Jedi mind trick.
So, so it's here it is. Points over under. It's 20 and a half. That's closer to where I figured that it would be. I'm taking you over. I'll just say that.
Right. I'll take the over. So then how do the Knicks win this game? Because it can't just be like, shut the Wemby down, because one, no one does that. Two, he's playing 24 minutes tonight.
They score 135 points. That's how the Knicks win this game.
Okay. So they can't win this game 115-110.
I don't know. You tell me. How do they do it? If they had Deuce McBride, I would make a full-throated argument that there was a universe in which they win the game 115-110. Honestly, they do not have Deuce McBride.
Honestly, what I'm thinking about it now is like, doing the research for this, I didn't realize how many legit 3-point shooters this freaking team has. Like,
dude, it's frightening.
I think you play them straight up, bro, and you trust in your offense. Trust in your offense and play them straight up. Let Mikal and OG do what they do, because they're going to have to make passes at some point. They're going to have to make passes. They're going to have to dribble. Lean on the strength of your defense. And go full throated into the offense. Like, this is what this team was built for.
Put pressure on them offensively. Absolutely.
You're the second in offensive rating and you're 14th in defense. The gap between your offensive and defensive rating is about 7 or 8 points. Ball up top.
The Spurs, I just looked it up. They are smack dab in the middle of the league. They are 15th in turnover rate. So in terms of how often they turn it over, like I think that the other answer to the question would be that if the Knicks can turn them over to an acceptable degree, and I don't know what that number would be, but that would be the other thing that I would be looking for if I had to look for something. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. Jason M says it, and I was like, you know what? We have to be more comfortable with the fact that sometimes Knicks are going to say, we're just going to outscore you to win the game.
And yeah, that's fine.
As someone who grew up, you and I grew up watching 90s Knicks basketball, we're like, defense, defense, defense. Like, nah, just say, like, you know what? We're going to score 130. Can you score 130? But you know what makes me, you know, warms my heart, John? In the last 2 weeks, the Knicks are ninth in defensive rating.
Yeah, no, they have a good defense. I'm sorry, I was just looking up the Spurs turnover by game. The Spurs are 5-4 when they turn the ball over at least 19 times. And then in all the other games where they've turned it over 15 or fewer times, they have 3 losses. So 14-3 or 13-3, a much better record. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the path. We'll see. This will be great. It's going to be a fun game tomorrow. I am going to do or attempt to do a watch along on the Knicks Film School YouTube channel. If either of you fine gentlemen want to join me, the invitation is open. But we will be doing something for that. I'll be on the post game. And then, like I said, we're going to be putting up some other stuff on the NBA Takedown channel. If you are watching this or have watched this episode on Twitter, do us a favor, do yourself a favor, go subscribe to the NBA Takedown YouTube channel so you can see all the great stuff that we do. And also, obviously, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Jeff, last thing before we get out of here, for you.
We want the cup, man. We want the cup. Stop acting too cool. This is a competition. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. And it's a single game competition that will not affect the standings. This is as close to as exhibition competition regular season as you're going to get. Enjoy it. And it's cool when you win things. It is cool when you win things because you earn them. That's why you play the game, is to win and to have fun. They have a chance to do both on Tuesday. Stop acting too cool. That's why if you're in the NBA, do not listen to these people who hate the cup. Just improve it. Don't listen.
It's great advice. We should put that on a t-shirt. Don't listen. Sean, final word.
I believe the concept of the Eastern Conference Championship Trophy started within like the last 10, 15 years or so. Sure. So, which means tomorrow night, the Knicks have a chance to lift a trophy for the first time since 1973. Now, again, is this trophy as important as the NBA championship? No, we understand that. Stop with that argument. But this matters. And stop going out of your way to tell us it doesn't matter when it's really you're doing this because it's the niche. It's the cool thing to do is to find something wrong with the NBA. Like Jeff said, there's been a complaint about the NBA every decade of our lives. And I guess this is the newest one. This matters. And guess what? You can have a good time and enjoy it. And sit down on Tuesday night, if you're a Knicks fan or a sports fan, or you know what? If you're a fan of basketball, sit down on Tuesday night, watch the game. It's going to be played at a high level. We can't complain about how these regular season games don't matter because they're not, the players don't care. But all these games have been played at a high level. To John's point, Jalen Brunson is probably going to play 40 minutes tonight. You know why?
Tomorrow night.
Because we want to win tomorrow night. Because they want to win the game.
I drinks on me if either at the next watch party, if either of you could tell me who the Eastern Conference trophy is named after.
Bill Russell.
Larry Bird.
This is awesome. Both of you guys selected Celtics, and neither of you selected the correct Celtic. The correct answer is the Bob Cousy trophy. It's unfortunate for both of you.
Because Magic is the West.
I didn't know that. I'll be honest.
You know what I didn't know? Bird and Magic are the conference MVPs.
They're
the conference MVP trophies.
Oh, what did you ask?
No. I was very clear with my question.
I thought you said conference MVP. Well, I'm sorry. What did you ask?
The Eastern Conference
Championship trophy.
I said the MVP. Hold on. That's on me. I wouldn't have got it anyway. I probably would have said Robert Parrish.
Oh, I found it. The West trophy.
Hold on, don't say it. I want to guess it.
Okay. No.
If the East
it's not
was
Jerry named, West.
Wait, what?
Jeff said Jerry West is not.
I was
going
to say they're not going to give him to him because he has a logo.
Okay, that would have been my first guess. So now I have to go a different direction.
This is created in 2001. Wow.
George Mikan?
No. You went too far back.
Bob Pettit, weren't the Hawks in the West back then? St. Louis?
They were, but it's not him. But you're in the right area. You're in the
Elgin
right
Baylor.
No.
You're
in the right time period. Time
Will?
Frame. No.
Who is it?
Oscar Robertson.
The Western Conference Championship Trophy is named after Oscar Robertson.
Yes, it is.
Who played in Milwaukee for the majority of his career.
Milwaukee, I believe, is in the Western Conference.
I'm sure they were because there was only one team past the Mississippi, and it was the Lakers, and they didn't even go past them until when they moved from Minneapolis. Yes.
I remember the Bulls were in the West for like until the Bulls were in the West and the Spurs were in the East until like the late 70s, something like that.
I hope I'm not talking out of my ass. I think the Rockets were in the East for a short period of time.
They probably were.
The NBA, and it's coming again because someone probably is going to be, man, the fight that's going to happen when it's time to decide which Western Conference team moves East. That'll be fun. All right.
That's an episode of NBA Takedown because I've fallen down a rabbit hole about the three teams that should do it, and I have a take on who it should be.
I already look forward to that. We will have much more where this came from, where that's coming from, will be coming from in due time. Everybody out there, thanks for checking out another episode of NBA Takedown. On behalf of my esteemed colleagues here, Sean with a W and Jeff J, I am Jonathan Macri. We will be back with more fun and games before you know it. Everybody, enjoy the Cup Final. That's why we do this, to watch basketball and enjoy it. Have fun. It's going to be a good game. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.